Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to an archive edition of Think. I'm Chris Boyd. How does a recession change the way we do business? When times are good and wallets are fat, most of us reserve price negotiation for buying cars and houses. The money saved can be substantial in those high-stakes deals, although the process can be agonizing. But with the economy making almost everybody more aware of the costs of what they buy, a growing number of buyers are demanding special deals. And for consumers ready to dicker, my guest today has learned there are a wealth of businesses willing to bargain. James Ragland is a columnist for the Dallas Morning News who recently has been writing about his own adventures in haggling. James, welcome back to Think.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for having me.
This started for you with what ordinarily would be just one of those minor annoyances. You went to a fast food place and didn't get what you ordered.
Right. I mean, and it happens more often than people might think, that you go through and you pick up a $10 order or a $12 order or a $15 order. You get home and you're missing a roll or you're missing a chicken tender or you're missing a burger. And it adds up, though. It's a, you know, the idea is that fast food places are convenient and you pay a premium price often for that convenience. And so I finally told my wife, you know, enough is enough. We work hard for our money. And when I made an order, they charged me $2 extra to go from 4 tenders to 6 tenders. So when I got home and realized I had 4, I picked up the phone and said, you know, I've had enough. I like to get my order right. And what they offered was for me to turn around and drive 5 miles back to the store to pick up 2 tenders. I've got 2 kids. It's 9:15 at night. And I said, I think I've got a better deal. Why don't I come in when it's convenient for me and let's figure out what we can work out. So the manager agreed to give me the right order at my convenience. And that was a start. But it goes beyond that. We have been increasingly annoyed with all the telemarketing calls. And we get about 30 brochures a week from companies offering discounts or soliciting our business. So I finally said, you know what? Rather than just hanging up 20 times a night or slamming the phone or throwing those brochures in the trash, let's take a look at those and methodically go down our bills and see if there's not some way we can get a better deal ourselves. And that's sort of the way it all began.
Did it help that you, as we would say in my family, got your Irish up over the fast food? Because ordinarily, I wonder if that irritation sort of gave you the energy to do this.
There's nothing better than a little moral outrage.
even over chicken tenders.
Absolutely. I think it may have annoyed my wife a little bit to kind of hear me on the phone. So one thing I learned after making a phone call or two is that it really doesn't pay or serve you well to get angry. Typically, when you get someone on the phone, you're dealing with no disrespect to the people who take the initial calls, but they're usually, you know, the customer sales reps or clerks, and they can't make the decision. So what I've learned is if you sort of are friendly to them, clearly articulate your issue, and then ask to speak to somebody maybe a pay grade or two above them, you can usually get something done.
So it's almost always not within the control of the first line person that you talk to.
Often not, although I have on occasion, it's like when I got a little bit annoyed about my cable bill. One of the calls we had gotten in solicitations was from a company offering us a substantially better deal on our phone internet cable bill. And so I talked to a person there and make sure I understood what the deal entailed. And then I called my own provider, and the first person I talked to was willing to give me a little something, but I didn't think it was sufficient. So then I got routed to the promotional department, or what they call customer retention, and the deal got substantially better. Because what I told that person was, look, I mean, I appreciate your service. For the most part, it's been okay. I just think I'm paying a bit much, and it's hard to ignore companies calling me and saying they can give me the same business for 50 or 60% less. So I'm a pretty loyal customer. I hope you can do more for me than $10 off or 5% off. And after being routed to a couple people, I managed to save essentially 25% off my bill, which came to more than $50 a month. You do that times 12 and I'm saving more than $600 a year.
Were you mentally prepared to walk away if it hadn't worked out with the cable internet company?
Absolutely. The good thing about it's almost like having a job offer in the wing. You know, you can go to your employer and say, I'm not happy here, and by golly, I want more pay and I want a better position, to which they may say, good luck.
There's the door.
There's the door. It always helps if you've got something that you're seriously looking at, I think. That's been my experience. So if you've got that offer in the wing, it gives you a little bit more confidence, but you do have to be willing and ready to say, adios, I'm out of here. So when I made that phone call, I had done my homework. I knew that I was willing to switch to another company because the other company, in my estimation, wasn't inferior. They were offering a similar product at a substantially lower price. So I was willing to make that switch. Same thing with my insurance company. When I made that phone call, I said, I'm incredibly loyal. I think you've been really good to me. But boy, I'm looking across the board here and it's like, I'm just finding two better deals. And is there something we can do? And I just didn't like their initial response. So I just got more aggressive with trying to make sure I was comparing apples to apples, that I was getting the same level of service that this other company was providing, so that when I decided to make that switch, I could give them one last call if I needed to. And I was very careful to make sure I had the name of the person with whom I was speaking. I want to know name, ranking, serial number. And what I said was, this is not to get you in trouble. I just want to make sure that when I get a follow-up call from your sales department trying to get my business back, I can say, well, you know what? I didn't want to give up the business, but here's why I did it.
It is sort of maddening that so many companies to which you've been a customer for years will continue to increase your rates while someone who comes in out of nowhere gets a much better deal.
Well, here's the name of the game. There's so much money being spent on recruiting or luring new customers. So everybody's after the new customer. They want to expand their base. And they forget the loyal customer. I was talking with a guy up at my coffee shop, for example, who was saying he'd been with the same company for 20, 25 years. And he finally called and said, you know, insurance company, I haven't had any accidents. I've had a good driving record. But every year it seems like I'm going up 2%, 3%, 4% my premium. And can't we do something about this? And initially he was told no. And he asked to speak to someone else. Not only did he get his price lowered, he ended up paying lower than he was currently paying, or almost what he was started paying about 10 or 15 years ago, because they just hadn't looked at his record. They hadn't been challenged, and they hadn't been, I hate to say threatened, but no one had threatened to sort of walk away. And so to keep him, they lowered his rate to, I mean, the lowest rate he'd had in about at least like 10 or 15 years. He said maybe as low as it was when I first signed up with them.
So have you had to make a calculation for yourself about the value of your time as compared with the value of the money that you might save?
Absolutely. In this economy, in my mind, spending a couple hours doing research or more and then spending maybe an hour on the phone or 30 minutes on the phone is well worth it. I have right now, for example, and I've probably spent about 6 or 8 hours at least doing this, which is like combing through sort of the brochures, going to the websites of energy providers, trying to see if there's any regulatory agencies, looking at complaints, for example, for energy providers to make sure I'm not about to switch to someone who has a horrible record when it comes to performance. But you know what I've saved in that amount of time? Right now, I'm looking at between $1,500 and $2,000 a year in savings, just in three areas. My home and auto insurance is one, my internet, cable, and phone service is two, and then my energy provider, where I might save anywhere from $200 to $500 a year, depending on if I go with a flex plan, which provides lower rate, or if I stick with a fixed rate plan, which is a little bit higher, but at least you know what your monthly bill is going to be every month when you open up your mail.
Yeah, that was going to be my question for you. How permanent are these savings? Because I know sometimes they'll say, okay, for 6 months, we'll lower your rate, but then you're right back to where you were.
That's a good point. And in fact, in the when I made the call to my cable provider, that's essentially what I got to start. It's like, well, we can do this right off the bat. We'll give you, for 6 months, we'll lower your rate to this amount, and then why don't we talk again in 6 months? To which I said, we will definitely be talking again in 6 months because, you know, I'm not happy with it now with this amount, and I won't be happy in 6 months. But that was a start. So I just moved on to the next sort of provider. And what I'm going to do during that 6 months is not sit on my hands, but start make sure that I'm continuing to keep an eye on the market, what's being offered, so that when I cross that threshold, I'll be ready to switch again, or I can talk to that same customer service rep. Get ready, Maurice. I remember his name. And say, you remember we talked about this in March? So let's have that conversation again. And you know what? So maybe they don't give me the full 25% discount. Maybe I'm going to save 20% or 15%. But it's better than saving nothing. And I've been very careful to tell people to make sure you don't just switch for the sake of switching, and that you do your due diligence, because you don't want to end up with inferior service or an inferior product, or, as you say, get some sort of promotional rate that lasts for a week or 6 weeks, and you're back where you started from. So, yeah, but these 6 months deals, I mean, if you just take 6 months, for example, I'm saving $300 if you annualize it or over the course of a year.
Part-time job.
Absolutely. My wife and I can have quite a few nice meals for $300.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you have plans for the money that you're saving.
Well, especially if we're driving through at $12 a pop. That's a substantial savings. Well, you know what? I mean, here's another motivation. You know, my company, we're in a terrible economy right now. You know, I am happy to be gainfully employed at a major company here in Dallas, a major media company. But
that's just had layoffs.
Just had layoffs. We, like a lot of other companies, have endured cutbacks in benefits. We've had a freeze on salaries, and then they just announced here recently we were having salary cuts. So in an economy like that, it just pays to be a very smart consumer and to keep a real sharp eye on where every dollar is going. So what we're doing is making sure right now we just sort of save the money so that we can still take a family vacation maybe this summer, or we can still eat out occasionally and have Sunday brunch. So we don't have any big plans for it. It's only about $1,500 to $2,000 now, but if the money keeps ratcheting up, who knows what we might do, you know? It's we're just looking forward to sort of saving the money and just getting the best deals that we can.
James Ragland is my guest. He writes for the Dallas Morning News and has been writing recently about haggling his way through a tough economy. You're welcome to join us at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we hear from Brian in Fort Worth. Hey, Brian.
Hi. Well, basically, my family's fortunate enough to be able to have a few pizza days, you know, pizza we order from a Pizza Hut or a Domino's. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with these New York Times story that was just released about all the Domino's people tampering with your food. But, you know, we've had to have pizza called back before, and sometimes they would resend out the pizza. But lately I've been having them just comp the charge of the pizza, you know, so I could get it free next time. But my worry is when these people know exactly what your order history is, and maybe they begin to know the problem customers. I guess I just wonder, you know, what the risk is overall for these pizzas, you know, being delivered to your house, having been tampered with. So I'll just take my response off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. Is that something you worried about at the chicken place?
Well, you know what? That's why I think it always pays to be courteous and to be polite, not to be angry, and not to take it out on the person who's handling your food. I did read the story about the pizza, the Domino's pizza. I think you're correct there. And let's keep in mind, that was one person who did a stunt, and he put it on videotape and put it up on YouTube. I am confident that's not representative of Domino's, the way they treat their customers, the way they handle the pizzas. In fact, I order from Domino's quite a bit. It's not a plug. It's just that if I get a coupon from Domino's, I'm as likely to order from them as I am from another, you know, high-end pizza place or neighborhood pizza joint. But there was a restaurant, Brian, you make a good point. There was one restaurant where I ordered from frequently, and they often got the meals wrong. And I just went and met with the manager and became, I said, you know what? I think you want to know this too. I love your food, and I just hate getting home and finding the order wrong. So I've had a couple of meals comp that way too. And a couple of times I've turned it down where they sort of missed messed up part of the order. I said, you know, I'm not looking for anything for free. I just want to bring it to your attention so that when there's a severe case where I order salmon and I get home and I've got like grilled chicken, I don't want to drive 20 miles, I will eat the grilled chicken, but say I expect my salmon meal when I come back through there. So there is a way to handle that.
James Ragland is with us from the Dallas Morning News. We're talking about haggling in a tough economy. We'd love to hear some of your stories, so give us a call.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
How much, quick?
What?
50 shekels.
Right.
What?
There you are.
Wait a minute. What? Well, we're supposed to haggle.
No, 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 I've got to get...
What do you mean, no, no, no?
I haven't got time.
Well,
I've
give
got...
it back then.
No, 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 I just paid you.
What?
Yeah.
This bloke won't haggle.
Won't haggle?
All right.
Do we have to?
Now, look, I want 20 for that.
I just gave you 20.
Now, are you telling me that's not worth 20 shekels?
No.
Look at it. For your equality, that's none of your goat.
All right, I'll give you 19 then.
No, no, no. Come on, do it properly.
What?
Haggle properly. This isn't worth 19.
You just said it was worth 20.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Come on, haggle.
All right, I'll give you 10.
That's more like it. 10? Are you trying to insult me? Me with a poor dying grandmother? 10?
All right, I'll give you 11.
Now you're getting it. 11? Did I hear you right? 11? This cost me 12. You want to ruin me?
17?
No, 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 no. 17.
18?
No, no, you're going to 14 now.
All right, I'll give you 14.
14? Are you joking? That's what you told me to say.
Oh, dear.
Oh, tell me what to say, please. Offer me 14.
I'll give you 14.
He's offering me 14 for this.
15.
17. My last word. I won't take a penny less or strike me dead.
16.
Done.
That was from Life of Brian, and we'll see if you get that obsessed with it, James. We'll bring you back in 6 months and see how it's gone. We're talking to James Ragland, a columnist for the Dallas Morning News, who has been haggling through this tough economy and writing about it in the paper. You can find that online at dallasnews.com. This brings me, in a really roundabout way, to the question of, you've talked about sort of calling places and dealing with restaurants. Have you had the gumption yet to walk into a retail store and say, you know, at the Gap, these khakis are going to be on sale in a month. You and I both know it. I want that price right now.
You know, it's funny because I didn't just sort of begin doing this, but actually last summer I decided to upgrade my, you know, everybody's doing the HD TV thing, and I, you know, had a HD TV, but I wanted a guy room, you know, sort of a media room. And
man cave.
And a man cave. I thought, you know, I want like a surround sound system. I never had one of those. I mean, I listened to mono, you know, I didn't know what stereo was until I was like about 20, you know, growing up in a small town. And I thought, my God, all that sound is wonderful. So I decided to invest in a system. So, yes, I went into a major store, which ironically happens to be out of business now.
You ruined Circuit City.
I mean, I brought them down. And I went in, I was buying so much stuff. And yeah, after buying, you know, you buy a TV, and my God, I didn't realize all the cables you have to have with that thing. And so I went in and started haggling over all the sort of secondary parts that I needed for that system, and brought the price down really about, I probably saved about $400 or $500,
yeah,
on all the supporting features that I needed to make that system up and go. But in my estimation, I'd spent quite a bit of money on the TV and on the surround sound that it was worth it, you know. So yes, I haggle, and most stores, as you know, will take a competitor's coupons. And most stores, if they run a sale within 30 days of a purchase, you could bring in your sales receipt. Always keep those receipts. And they will actually match that discount or give you the same discount that they have given to someone else. I've actually done that a little bit beyond the 30 days and managed to get a little bit off on another major department store. This was a couple of 3 years back. And I didn't haggle as much. It was just I saw the ad in the paper, so my gosh, that's the same system I bought, and it's like $300 cheaper. And I went in and said, come on, you can give me a little bit better deal. And I managed to get another 10 or 15% off my original purchase price. So, yes, don't let anything – you'll never get anything if you don't ask. And the key is, if you go into, say you're a regular at a particular restaurant or a major department store, and they know that you're a frequent customer, they want your business. They want to keep you. And chances are, if they make money off that product by offering it for a much lower price 20 days after you bought it or 30 days after you bought it, that means they're still making money off of you, even if they give you an additional 5 or 10 or 15% discount, and it all adds up.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's
please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
How are you?
Great, thank you. Go ahead, please.
Well, I just wanted to say I'm self-employed, and I've had just a small downturn in my normal amount of business, and I have always been a proponent of haggling, both on the giving and the receiving end. If I have someone call my shop, I make rubber stamps and do engraving, name badges, nameplates, things like that. If somebody calls for a quote, I give them a quote. I also tell them I want the job. If you find a lower price out there, please come back. If it's written, I will do the work for what you got quoted. I shop my competition pretty fervently, and I know what they're doing, what their turnaround time is, and who's happy with what places, and who's unhappy. So I've always used this to my advantage.
Do you find, Lori, that your customers are ready to engage in that, or are they surprised that you're willing to sort of play with price?
Well, I don't know if they're surprised or not. I mean, I'm hungry. I'm self-employed. If I'm not working, I'm not eating, and I'm not paying my bills. And what I'm looking for is kind of the loyal customer who, when they need my products, is going to come back to me time and time again.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Good for you, Lori. You know, one of the things we've lost in the age of sort of these giant corporations and conglomerates is that sort of mom and pop attitude about business, that you do care if you lose a customer. You do care if a customer is not 100% satisfied. Lori sort of represents sort of that sort of ageless esprit de corps that you used to find in small businesses, mom and pop businesses, which I like. And one of my complaints, if you will, if I have one, and trust me, I do, my wife can tell you, is that dealing with these large companies, you're often getting somebody on the phone, and they may be in another state, or heaven forbid, another country, and you're trying to get some satisfaction from them, and it just often doesn't work. And often they don't care. I've encountered rather indifferent attitudes, which is why you have to be real polite, real courteous, but say, may I speak to your supervisor? Is there anyone else I can speak to? And it often helps. You know, another thing is, and talking with Lori, one of the upticks in this economy, one of the businesses that's seen upticks in their businesses, like secondhand shops, because they do haggle. People can go into a secondhand shop, see a price, and know that there might be some flexibility there, and that the owner or the manager or the person who's selling a consignment has some wiggle room. And people like that. I found that people actually like it when they can go in and say, hey, you're asking $300 for that. What's the best you can take for it? And someone says, I'll take $250 for it. And you say, how about $200? And you settle on $225. I think that's a beautiful thing. I get a joy. It's almost like an adrenaline rush to kind of go into a secondhand shop and to come out with something like that where the price tag said one thing and you came out and say $50 or $75.
And it's a good way to practice, I guess, too, for going to companies that don't traditionally haggle. If you've had a little time on Craigslist or in a secondhand shop, you can sort of hone those skills.
Unfortunately, Chris, I have a little bit more experience in this. You know, for years, I'm sort of an antique collector, too. So I've had to sell antiques on consignment. And so I've gotten that phone call from the owner of the store calling me and saying, hey, you want $100 for this Buddha, this rare Buddha, and they're offering $5. What's the best you can take? And you have to negotiate over the phone. But as the owner, I know what I have into that particular piece and where the margins are, so I can sort of counter offer and go back and forth and hopefully make a sale. So there is a give and take there. And most places that are secondhand shop or that are not sort of the giant retailers actually welcome and invite that. If I found that they welcome and invite it, what's the worst thing that can happen? They can tell you no. I haven't been chased out of any store yet by saying, can you do any better?
Yeah, so no one has taken umbrage at your request. They might have said, no, I can't do it, but no one has said, what are you talking about?
Not at all. In fact, even my insurance provider, with whom I've had a pretty loyal relationship, looked at it and said, you know, based on where you live and your market, this is about the best we can do. And the person with whom I spoke, who happened to be a fairly senior-level person, did offer me like a $7.50 discount per 6 months. We're talking $15 versus the $900 that I was able to realize by dealing with another company that had offered me a very serious offer. So that's a big difference there. So it's hard to stay loyal when all they're offering you back is $15 versus another competitor is throwing in a few other perks. And you check their record and see that they're a solid company, good performance, no more complaints in the company that you're dealing with. And that's a lot of money to leave on the table.
Let's go next to Brenda in Dallas. Hello, Brenda.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, James. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Brenda.
I'm enjoying the show. This is a good one. He just addressed the question I had, because I've gotten on the phone and had problems or had things that were happening, and companies have outsourced their customer service to somebody out of the country who doesn't give a fat rat what happens in Dallas, Texas, or any of the surrounding areas, or wherever you are calling from. And I just wanted to know, did you think that's by design, that companies do that so they don't have to support their customers?
Well, you know, I think most companies, I mean, at the highest level, they're in the business of having customers. That affects your bottom line. But I think you've touched on something. I do think there's sort of a level of deniability, if you will, that's sort of built into these layered corporations. And when they've outsourced so much that the people who are handling the sales for them, I suspect they're working on commission, and probably they are also told, I mean, if everybody that picked up the phone and called and wanted a discount, they gave it to them right away. These people probably wouldn't be in their sales positions for a long period of time. So you have to kind of keep in mind what their job is, what their role is, what their responsibility is, and that's namely luring customers and making as much money as possible. So there is sort of a level of deniability there. But that said, I do think they want your business, so you just simply have to sort of ratchet it up a level. I always get the name of the person with whom I'm talking. That does two things. That lets the person know that you're serious about the phone call and that you're not going to leave it at that. And then secondly, it helps establish sort of a relationship or a bond with that person when you can say, well, listen, Bob, and the conversation goes on like that. And then Bob, if you will, knows that when you talk to his supervisor, you're going to be able to invoke his name and say, well, I spoke to Bob. And you can sort of reflect how Bob dealt with you and what Bob's response is. So it helps to sort of know with whom you're talking. Every time I make one of these phone calls, for example, I jot down the person's name, the time of the phone call, and if I remember, I jot down how long I talked to that person. So that if I have to pick up the phone and call back later, I can say, well, I spoke to Bob at 3:15 on Tuesday, and we talked for about 5 minutes, and we just got nowhere with this. So I'm hoping we can have a breakthrough today because I really want to stay with you, but I need some slack here. And with that fail, when you sort of ratchet it up a little bit, I've almost always got some discount, even if it's unsatisfactory, but some discount that way.
I wonder what your perspective is on what you should say when you call and ask for a lower rate. There are people who are in the school that say, well, I ought to tell the truth that, times are hard and I don't know if I can afford this anymore. I wonder, though, if that doesn't actually work against you, because the company, even if it gives you a lower rate to retain you, wants to think that you're going to stay on and be a lucrative customer in the future.
I've never done the woe is me line because I do think in some ways that could backfire for you. But also don't think it hurts to be transparent. If that's your motivation, if you're saying, I want to keep my landline, but I've got a pay cut or I've lost my job and I need some sort of a discount here to sort of get through, maybe they got a promotional rate they can offer you for 6 months. So be smart about how you approach it. I wouldn't let that be sort of the standard line I use for getting discounts, saying, I'm hurting right now. I think everybody's hurting. What I found to be more useful is to be armed with comparisons or to know what the market will bear. That's why it helps to do a little bit of a research, or if you've got a counter offer, to sort of use that as well. But I don't think I've read occasional reports where companies have, knowing that customers are facing tough times now, actually giving them a temporary price break so they can sort of get through a tough quarter or a tough 6 months. So I think use every weapon in your toolbox.
Let's go next to Allison in Dallas. Hello, Allison.
Hi. I was calling because I wanted to find out. I have been shopping around for different rates on my credit card, and you always get these things in the mail about that, lowering your rates. Well, I got one, and it just happened to be with the one, the credit card I have. So I called them, and I switched it over to that. You get that rate for your transfers, and you get another rate for your regular cash or your next charges. So I had that. That was in January, February. And then about 2 weeks ago, I got a letter saying that my rates are going up, and if I want to keep the rates that I have, then I have to call them back and let them know. And when I did that, they said, oh, yes, well, you can keep the rates on what you've already charged and on your transfer. But anything else you charge, the rates are going to go up. And it bothered me a lot because I just got this rate, and they said these rates are good for a year. So what do you do when something like that happens?
Well, in that particular case, I might put what you just observed in a letter in writing and direct it to the customer service department. They've already given you sort of the break and say, just only on new charges. And if you got a copy of that original agreement, it would help to enclose that as well. And just ask them if they would at least honor that for the course of 1 year. This is a good cautionary tale. I think anytime you're looking at credit cards, and let's be clear, even when you're doing, say, insurance, for example, like auto and home insurance, you got to make sure, for example, some of these companies might look at your credit report. So when you're doing like auto or home insurance, they may give you a quote, but it may be contingent on, the best quote may be contingent on you having like an excellent credit rating. Well, maybe your credit score is only good, or maybe it's fair. And when you finally cut the deal, maybe it's not going to be as lucrative as you thought it might be. So be very diligent, particularly with credit cards. You've got to read the small print. You've got to see if that's sort of a promotional offer. You've got to see if there are any hidden fees that you might not know about. And you got to see for how long these terms apply. And sometimes they will say in small print, they reserve the right to sort of change the terms on a moment's notice. And you don't want to switch to a card that has that much latitude to affect your bottom line. When I looked at my energy provider, that was one of the things that sort of really got me outraged. I looked at our bill, and I was setting up the coffee shop after beginning this process and talking with someone who said that they had picked up their bill and noticed that their rate had gone from about 13 or 14 cents to like 18 cents. So sure enough, I had my wife sort of pull our monthly bill, and our rate, which I thought had been in the 13-cent range, had gone to 14.3, and then it was up to 16 cents. So I thought it was sort of a classic bait and switch where I had one rate, and then they sort of raised it on me without me knowing, because I just really wasn't paying attention. I get that bill, I see what we owe, we write a check, and we just weren't paying attention. So good for you for paying attention. Send a letter to the credit card company and stay on top of them. Make them honor that one-year rate.
James Ragland is here. He's a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. We're talking about haggling in a tough economy.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering a progressive graduate degree with flexible part-time study. You can pursue your passion at SMU, and you can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
Listening to an archive edition of Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. James Ragland is here. We are talking about haggling in a tough economy. You can read his recent writing on this in the Dallas Morning News. You can find the articles online at dallasnews.com. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Sandy in Dallas. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having Mr. Ragland on. I actually really enjoy his columns and live in his neighborhood.
Oh, Sandy, thank you.
The one thing that I find interesting is when I go to the grocery store, there is probably 9 times out of 10 a price that is inaccurate in the computer. And I get to the point where it's like, okay, I have to now go stand in customer service for a 10 cents. But it's the principle of the thing, because the person behind you may be buying that product, and that's another 10 cents and another 10 cents and another 10 cents. And so I'm wondering, one, how do you keep your patience as much as you do? And two, what can I do to gain better control of this 10 cents? Do I ask them to get the product for free? What do I do?
Sandy, I've encountered that so many times. About less than a month ago, about 3 weeks ago, I was in a store and I bought a hair care product. And it's one of those products, I guess it's sort of high-end, so they have it on the lock and key. I was just sort of startled that and I had to wait 5 minutes for like an assistant manager to come over with the keys on her hip and open up this glass container. And, of course, then I found that, you know, it's so hard to find like the right product that you really like, so I sort of jotted it down, I want this product. And so here's and, of course, they didn't have it, so I'm trying to find a substitute. And I was looking, and so I finally compromised and found one that was not $16, but about $7.93. I just remember it clearly. I think, well, since I haven't tried this, I'll do the $7.93. Well, I get to the counter, and I'm paying, and I had that in a couple of the items, and my bill came to about a little over $20-some-odd. I'm like, whoa, it's like, I'm thinking it should be about 10 or 12. And I realized they've charged me almost double, like $14, $15 for that product. So I immediately said, hold on for a second. This product is not that price. And the guy sort of, you know, looked, and I told him that, to, you know, it's on the it's marked that way. He, in that instance, and I had five people behind me, I was a little nervous, but he finally just sort of rescanned it, entered it in, and did $7.93 and let me have the product. Now, I've been in other situations where, you know, I've got two small kids, so I have to go buy, you know, sometimes diapers or milk at the last minute. And I've gone into a store, and I realized that the milk product was, I was paying 40 cents more. I pulled out the receipts that I had for like the month, and I'd gone up there on short notice and bought milk about three times, and they charged me 40 cents more for a half gallon. And so I actually called the manager and got no response. And my second message was, I don't want to haggle over like what amounts to like 80 cents, but it's sort of the principle of the thing. The product is still marked for this price, and you're still selling it for that. So the next time, I went back in there and got the milk, got up to the counter, and I must have had, first of all, I waited for seven people to get out of the line, then my turn came, but I stood there and insisted on getting the right price for it, and I apologized to the lady behind me, but I was patient. He had to bring the manager or assistant manager over because the 40 cents, at that point, it was a matter of principle, and I said, I'm really sorry, but this has happened repeatedly, and you guys really need to make sure that the prices reflect what people are going to pay when they get up here. I made my point. I got my 40 cents back in that instance. I apologize to two people behind me, but you've got to pick your battles, whether it's 10 cents because you've got a time thing there too. What you can do is circle that product, make a note of it, and then do a phone call, or when you come back to the store, ask to meet with the manager and sort of go over the sort of the pricing issue that way, because it's a matter of principle more than the 10 cents, I assume.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Wichita Falls.
Please don't call now. The show has been pre-recorded.
Show, Chris, very informative. All right to my comments and point here. I've found that standing your ground and dressing down is very helpful when you're haggling for almost any item, even vehicles. Cut a long story short, a couple of years back, we were in the market for another used vehicle, and we settled on a price for trade-in on the current one, and that we would take no less than $4,000. For trade-in value. We finally tracked down a local dealership in town here and was very agreeable to settle on that amount. And we located a used vehicle on the lot that was going for $10,000. So already we had walked it down $4,000. So now we were looking at around $6,000 for a very nice vehicle used on that. And when it came time to closing the deal on the purchase, they presented me a rundown of what was involved in the vehicle and whatnot. And then there were some fluff fees factored in, okay, on the deal. And I didn't understand what they were, and I wasn't getting a satisfactory answer as to what was involved in these fluff fees. So after a bit of a time waste there, the salesman disappeared, I think, to someone in management and talked it over and came back to me. And I said, well, you know, you've got a deal here. You have a sale today. If these fees would just disappear because I don't understand them and you're not explaining this to me very well. He went back again, talked it over with management, and came back and said, okay, fees are gone. And you're walking out the door, $6,000 solid on a used vehicle.
Good for you, Natalie.
Well, so you can do things. So I find that dressing down, I suggest for big purchases, perhaps a nice clean jean set wouldn't hurt anybody at all. And perhaps going late in the day to certain places is also a good idea. They want to make a sale and they want to close up shop for the day.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know, hearing her talk about that, it just makes me feel like I need some Tums. That process of buying a car is the most awful, most, you know, everybody knows it's a game. And I always now bring someone with me who knows what they're doing, because it's hard to stand there sometimes and have those fights.
That's so key, because here's the deal. When you go into a car dealership, whether it's new or used, keep in mind that those guys do it every single day. They live and breathe selling cars. They know, and they've got all the advantages. They know what they can really do on the car. They know the best deal they can do. So what they're trying to figure out is, A, they do want your business, but they're trying to figure out how can we get maximize our profit here. So you're at a disadvantage unless you go in and have done your homework in advance. Know what you're willing to pay. Know what you're willing to put down. Always like those deals where my wife and I bought a car a couple, 3 years ago. And so we went in and we're negotiating the price. Well, the salesman was pretty slick. I think he could figure out that I sort of knew what I wanted to pay. I knew exactly what we were looking for. He turned the table and started talking about what he could make the payment. And I'm like, I'm not worried about the payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an old trick, right? And then it's suddenly you're paying for 6 years
instead
of four.
Exactly. We can get your payment. So I'm not worried about the payment. Well, anyway, and then he had quoted one price on the car, but I had done my due diligence. I had visited several car shops. I'd even looked at a couple car dealerships out of state and knew exactly what the best deal I could get. And so I thought he was so unprincipled that here's what I did. We got to the point where even he was asking how much I was going to put down. I said, I don't know what I'm going to put down. Maybe I'll put nothing down. Maybe I'll put 20% down. Maybe I'll cut you a check. I have no idea. He goes, well, you got to put something down. I said, well, I really don't have to. And he became argumentative. I finally stood up with my wife. We walked out. I shook his hand, and I left that deal on the table. I came back. The car we were interested in had been sold, but I bought another car that was actually slightly more expensive, more bells and whistles, but negotiated a fair price for that. But guess what? He didn't get that business. I went to another salesman and said, because I liked the dealership, but said I had a really bad experience, went in, and that guy honored his word. We negotiated a price. So sometimes you do stand on principle. Sometimes it means dealing with a different individual within the same company, because you do have some unprincipled and unscrupulous salesmen, I think, in all these industries. So,
and they are competing against each other.
And they are competing against each other. In fact, he was trying to figure out how he could get a piece of the action there. He wanted to make sure that I told the sales manager that he was the one that sort of brought me in. I just sort of politely smiled and looked the other way. I wasn't mean to him, but I made my point. I got the deal that I wanted. I got the a slightly better deal, I think. And he didn't get a cut of the action, which delighted me to no end.
I have to wonder if there's like a little photograph of you and with your name underneath in every retail establishment in a certain radius of North Texas. Deal fairly with this guy or you will hear about it.
You know what? That's the key, though. I think anybody that deals with me, I hope they will say that I'm a fair dealer. I got to tell you one story here where I turned down something free, but I did haggle. I mentioned to you earlier that I, sort of an antique collector. I had some antiques I had in storage, and I commissioned this company. I didn't have time to go move them, so I need to sort of get out of that storage facility. I didn't want to spend extra fees, so I thought, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and liquidate these last pieces, give a couple of pieces to relatives who might want them and just get them out of there. So I needed them moved on a fairly short notice. So I negotiated a price and met with the gentleman and said, here's what I want, and I even put a cap on it. The problem was, see, even the Mr. Hagler here can make an occasional mistake. I didn't have a written contract. Well, when I got the bill, he charged me 50% more than he had promised. And so I fired off an email saying, my goodness, where did this come from? And we went back and forth, and I got him on the phone and wanted to talk to him personally and went over in detail what we had talked about. Well, as it turned out, he had given me more. It took more time. There were some packaging materials he hadn't accounted for, all of which I said was like his fault, not mine. But I said, I'll tell you what, but if you send me a detailed bill, let me see where the money went. I want to make sure I'm not being taken here. He was so upset at being questioned that he finally said, I hate people like you. I put all this work into it. I got the stuff out of there, and you want something for free. So how about that? You have it for free. Well, I didn't want that. I got the bill, looked at it, and rather than even taking $10 or $20 off, I paid him the full amount. I said, looks like it's a fair deal. It's not what I asked for, and I wish I had a contract, but I'm going to honor it, even though it was a verbal contract. So sometimes you have to play fair. I just believe that things sort of come back on you, if you will, and it's all about being fair and being honest and being transparent. So sometimes when you're haggling, things may not go your way, but just try to be fair in your dealings with people, and I think they'll be fair with you.
Let's go next to Jean in Dallas. Hello, Jean.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Jean.
Hi, yeah, go ahead, please.
Hi, Jean.
Hi, I want to tell you, as always, Chris, this is a fabulous program, and I have so many stories, but I'm going to make it very brief for you, because I wanted to echo your guest's comment about documentation and ratcheting it up. Actually, last week, I received a statement for a bank that's changed hands probably 3 or 4 times. And when I opened the account initially, I was told all my fees would be waived. And each time it changed hands, I received documentation that says the fees will be waived. However, within about 6 months of receiving that same documentation, I noticed that my account is being charged fees. Well, last week I received yet another statement where the fees had been charged. And previously, last year, when I'd received that same statement saying that the fees would be charged, I called the bank and I said, my account has been grandfathered. I'm not supposed to be charged fees. And she said, yes, you're correct. And I did as you said. I wrote her name down. I wrote down the date. I didn't write down the amount of time that I talked to her, so I'll do that next time. Great advice. But I filed it away. Well, last week when I got yet another statement where I was charged fees, I called the bank again. And, of course, the person I talked to said they could do nothing. So I said, can I please talk to your manager? I, you know, ratcheted it up. And the manager got on the phone and said, you know, can't do anything to help you. I can't waive those fees. I said, I was told. And he said, who do you talk to? Who did you talk to? I went and pulled out my recently filed tax returns because I keep all my documents with my tax return, and I gave him the individual's name. And he still was even reluctant, although the person's name was very unusual, so I couldn't have been making it up. I said, well, I have the letter, and I have the date that I spoke to the person, and I luckily had written down waived fees. And I scanned the document, I emailed it to him, and I just got a note today. I just received my refunded fees. And I was so excited because I kept all that documentation, and I never would have gotten my fees back had I not done that. So your documentation is important.
Great to hear. Thanks, Gene.
That was great, Gene. You make my all-haggling team, my all-state haggling team. That was
Her picture's up next to yours.
Absolutely. That was impressive. I cannot underestimate the importance of documentation. And it could be something as innocent as calling the restaurant when your order is wrong, and making sure that you take note of the person you're talking to there and the manager. It just always helps. And I just sort of make that note, push it aside, and it comes in handy when issues like that arise. It's just a good habit, too. I've told my wife, neither one of us, I got to be honest with you, I'm not the most organized. I hate organization, but you just have to do it. And I told her we got to get even more expansive files, just make sure we put, you know, every bill that you just sort of keep, auto repair, home repair, all sorts of bills. Chris can attest, I'm dealing right now with a flat tire, and I told my wife I got to pull my records because I bought those tires about 9 months ago. It ended up being like a nail in it, but I wanted to make sure that if it weren't a nail, I was ready to go back to the tire dealership and say, you need to repair this tire, give me some money back.
James Ragland is a columnist for the Dallas Morning News. You can find his recent work on haggling online at dallasnews.com. James, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.